You're listening to SBS News.
When Melina Astana arrived in Australia in 2004, she'd already spent years working as a lawyer in India.
I came here after I got married. Upon arrival, I started a Master's of Degree at the University of Melbourne, a Master's of Law degree, and I got really good grades. However, when I started applying for jobs, I was told that my degree and experience were not really worth much, and recruiters told me that I was unlikely to get a job at a top-tier firm or even a mid-tier, so I should apply to smaller firms. Some people even told me to change my profession.
But she persisted.
I found an indirect way of approaching partners directly at law firms through my contacts, and where I did get an appointment, I impressed upon them the value of my unique skill set and experience would bring to the organization. So eventually I did land up with my first role at a top tier, and then I moved to another top tier. But the culture of, top tiers is not very, it's not conducive to cultural diversity in any case, and it's not very suitable for people of colour.
The most recent data from the Law Society of New South Wales shows the number of practising solicitors in the state who were born overseas has increased from 22.5% in 2003 to 28% in 2020. But it's still much lower than the general New South Wales population, with the 2016 census showing 35% of people living in the state were born overseas. And while 3.4% of the New South Wales population identifies as Aboriginal and or Torres Strait Islander, they only make up 1.1% of the state's solicitors. Similar patterns of the lack of cultural diversity in the legal profession are reported across Australia. The Law Society of New South Wales, which represents around 43% of members of Australia's legal profession, has launched a new guide outlining steps firms and other workplaces can take to become more culturally diverse and inclusive. UN woman Sonia Stewart is CEO of the Law Society of New South Wales. She's the first Indigenous person and the first woman to hold the position.
What this guideline seeks to do is to help the profession around improving their inclusivity and cultural diversity of their staff. And so the principles are to commit to cultural diversity, to measure it, advice about recruiting widely and reducing barriers to entry, and then looking for opportunities to support cultural diversity in the wider community, developing an inclusive culture, and then the sixth one is about evaluating measures. So the guidelines gives advice about how firms of any size could go about implementing those principles.
She says there are four main reasons why increasing cultural diversity is so important.
The first one is, the war on talent. Like, you want to ensure that you retain, you attract the best skilled staff. Secondly, there's a lot of evidence around diverse and inclusive workplace cultures have better performance and productivity. You want to be competitive, you want to have a workforce which matches the clients that you're seeking to serve. And the fourth one is an important one, particularly when we're talking about the legal profession, is you want to ensure that you comply with the array of legislation and compliance requirements, particularly around anti-discrimination, and make sure that your workplace is doing the right thing.
Amani Green is president of the African Australian Legal Network. He says the law firms his organisation works with have a very strong desire to improve diversity, but don't really know where to start.
They often approach us to help them, I suppose, as part of that process. That's kind of what we do with the internships, is we're connected to the community. If they offer us opportunities, then we'll be able to plug people into those opportunities. So I think the goodwill is there, and it's just a question of how to capitalize on that goodwill. And to the extent that organizations like the Law Society of New South Wales are building resources to help people that actually act on that goodwill towards diversity, then I think that's a good thing.
Mr. Green says one problem with the legal profession is that how far someone gets in their career isn't necessarily based on how talented they are, but what connections they have. For example, the networks they formed going to a particular school or university. He says that institutionalisation of privilege greatly disadvantages people from culturally diverse backgrounds.
From knowing our members and from the feedback that we get about them from our external programs, I know that these folks are incredibly talented and really capable, But the opportunities to succeed might not be there for them in the same way that they are for people who are perhaps like more privileged, more connected.
Data shows while people with Asian cultural backgrounds make up around 10% of the Australian population, they only account for 7.7% of partners in law firms. Christine Tran's parents arrived in Australia by boat in the mid-1970s as Vietnam War refugees. She says when she began her career, she never expected to be made partner, especially not at one of the world's most elite law firms like Herbert Smith Freehills.
You know, I've been in the legal profession for, you know, more than 10 years now, and I can certainly say that that's changing. But certainly when I started my legal career, it was unusual to have, you know, someone from, you know, an Asian background in the room.
But despite the changes she's witnessed and the position she holds within the company, she still experiences discrimination and unconscious bias.
You know, going to a meeting to meet an expert candidate, and, you know, he was a white male, and I brought with me a white male graduate lawyer, and he would direct his attention to that person. And so I will have to reassert like my authority and power in that conversation to say, no, you should be listening to me because I'm the one who's going to be giving you the instructions or giving you the briefing. Like little things like that, I think they take up time and energy.
It's a feeling Melina Astana knows all too well. She started her own legal firm, is National Vice President of the Asian Australian Lawyers Association, is the first Indian-born person to be elected Vice President of the Law Institute of Victoria, and sits on several boards. But despite all of her accomplishments, she constantly feels excluded because of her cultural background.
It's sometimes deliberate, sometimes unconscious. I'm sidelined for leadership opportunities. If I raise issues, I'm a troublemaker. If I bring a diverse viewpoint, I'm not considered a team player. If I seek a leadership position, I get comments about spreading myself too thin. Whereas if an Anglo-Saxon person says the same thing, they're a star performer, a trendsetter, a leader. So there's conscious and unconscious biases that always exist. There's discrimination that's overt, and there's discrimination that we don't see, but it's always there.
She says she believes quotas for cultural diversity need to be introduced, as they have been for gender, to create a level playing field. She says not having a legal profession that reflects Australian society can have real-world consequences for those who need culturally specific representation.
If they don't feel that they can access the system because they're from a multicultural background and they're not adequately represented, or their issues are not understood because of language, cultural or socioeconomic factors, then this is an issue of access to justice. For example, dowry is not a concept that is understood very well by the judges or the police. And on another boat that I'm on, we advocated for that, and now we've actually got dowry included as a form of economic abuse in the family violence legislation in Victoria. That's a big step because now the judges and the police will understand that. But that would not have been the case if there were a few judges who were from that background and knew what dowry actually meant.
Amy Hall, SBS News.